The City Club of Boise is a nonpartisan forum dedicated to free speech and the open exchange of ideas on issues critical to the Intermountain Northwest. Its motto is, "Things happen when people start talking." You can find information regarding forums, salons, and tours at cityclubofboise.org. The premier sponsor for the City Club is AARP. Annual sponsors include Northwest Nazarene University and the Idaho Humanities Council. Media partners are Boise State Public Radio, 670 KBOI, the Idaho Statesman, and Peppershock. Forum series sponsors include Micron, Echelon Group, and Perkins Coie. The moderator for today's forum is Kevin Richard.
Welcome to our City Club Forum. My name is Kevin Richard. I'm a reporter with Idaho Education News. We're a web-based publication. We focus on K-12 and higher education. Today, and for today only, we give you the screaming deal that you get to hear two college presidents for the price of one. You won't get this anyplace else, folks. In February, the trustees of the College of Idaho voted unanimously to hire co-presidents, as you might imagine, a unique arrangement in the higher education field. The trustees selected two presidents with close ties to the college into the Treasure Valley. To my immediate left is Doug Brigham. He is a 1987 graduate of the College of Idaho. He spent 20 years in financial and operational leadership with Washington Group International before joining Title I Corporation in 2008. Now, during that time, he maintained his ties to the campus, taught some finance courses, and served as a College of Idaho trustee and chaired the Board of Trustees from 2015 to 2017. For close to four decades, Jim Everett dedicated himself to building the YMCA of the Treasure Valley. When he joined the staff of the Boise YMCA, the organization had only 3,000 members. Today, the Y serves more than 57,000 members across six locations. Now, I've known Jim for a long time, and I had a chance a couple of years ago to write one of those kind of boilerplate, but not boilerplate. When you get to talk to Jim Everett, nothing's boilerplate. But I got the chance to do one of those retirement profiles of prominent people. And, of course, I've had to retract that story because his retirement would be so short-lived. I want to spend some time talking about the governing model a little bit and asking you a few questions about that. But first, why don't you take a minute and tell us what this audience might not know about the College of Idaho that they need to know, because we're in Boise, the C of I is in Caldwell, and that isn't a lot of distance, but it's enough distance that I think people may not know as much about the college as they should. So start there, and we'll dive into questions.
Thanks, Kevin. We're glad to be here, and we hopefully the Boise High students will pay particular attention to this, because we'd love to see more of you over on our campus. I'll start with a couple of things. There's a study done. There's millions of studies that have been done on what it takes to help a student be successful at the college level. The one we like the best is called, it comes from a book called How College Works. And this study came up with a pretty simple factor, a formula. It's having a mentor and two good friends. And I think at the College of Idaho, probably more so than almost any place I know of, you can't possibly escape the College of Idaho without developing good mentorships and friends there. It's a small campus. We tell people all the time, don't come there if you want to hide. You may get a call from a professor if you miss a class. It's that intimate. We know names. That's a big part of who we are. The things that you probably don't know that we want to make sure, we're going to probably say this a few times, we now have 74 different countries represented on the campus of the College of Idaho. We have a student body that's 14% international from those 74 different countries. 14% of our student body are Latino. Over 30% of our student body identify as non-white. We think that diversity is a huge part of who we are on the College of Idaho. There's no place else where you're going to be exposed to that kind of diversity. We've got sitting at a table here, Andrew Clifford. Andrew's one of our great students. His roommate's from Senegal. His lab partner in chemistry is from Kazakhstan. We think that is tremendously important. Obviously, it's great for the international students, but it's probably even better for the local students to get to have that exposure. We believe in the liberal arts. You're going to see lots of jobs that exist in the future that we can't even dream of today, jobs that do exist now that won't exist in the future. NPR did a story a while back on the number one major that Microsoft's looking for, anthropologists. Not what you might think of. And why anthropologists? Because it's about culture. It's about learning how cultures work. And culture, as we all know, is absolutely critical in any kind of workplace. So I could go on for a long time, but that's part of who we are. And a couple of the factors, just one more point I want to make is the affordability. Most people would be surprised how affordable we are. That's a big, having access to our what we have to offer is huge. And 30% of our students are Pell eligible or are high need, which means they can bring about $1,000 to the equation of paying for their college experience. And we're able to provide scholarship support to many of those students. So those are a couple of facts.
Yep, I think Jim covered it.
So you're the silent partner in it.
Exactly.
Okay. So how did you get here? How did we get to a point of co-presidents? Walk us through the process that got you here.
It's a long process, but I'll try to break it down a little bit. So as you mentioned in the startup, both Jim and I have had a long connection to the College of Idaho. Jim's a former trustee. I'm a former trustee. I'm an alum of the college. Met my wife at the college. Jim was most recently, after he retired from the Y, he was swim coach. That was his post-retirement gig. Did well as a coach, didn't do well at the retirement part. So we both had a long connection to the college, and when the vacancy occurred a little over a year ago, we both got approached separately by a few different people about would we have an interest in throwing our hat in the ring. As individuals, not as co-president at that point in time. And I think we both kind of entertained those thoughts, honestly pushed back against those thoughts a little bit because we didn't have a traditional academic background. Neither of us came from the academy, so to speak, and so we were resistant from that standpoint, but we kept being approached, and I think at least for me, when I kind of shifted a little bit was when I had a couple of faculty members approach me, and that was my biggest resistance was on a college campus, if you don't have the support of the faculty, you're dead in the water. And when they came and said, you know what, we really want leadership, we want help on the business side, we're fine on the academic side, that started to kind of turn my attention. And so again, longer story short, I ended up submitting. I hit send on a Friday morning, the last day applications were due. Got in a car, went over, picked up my parents, and they wanted to see the leaves changing colors in eastern Idaho. So I had about a six-hour drive ahead of me, thinking about what I had just done when I hit send. And by the time I was driving back with them on Sunday afternoon, somewhere between probably Fairfield and Arco, I don't remember where, I really started thinking, is this the right thing? Do I have the skill set to pull this off on my own? And I've known Jim for 25 years, been involved on a couple of different committees that he had at the Y, and I mean, everybody in this room probably knows Jim. You can't say a bad thing about Jim Everett. And I just kept thinking, boy, wouldn't it be great to do something with Jim? And so that kept twirling in my head a little bit. Fast forward to Monday. So applications were due Friday. Monday, first thing I do is I call up Jim, and I think I found him on the swim platform Monday morning on campus. And I said, Jim, I want you to know something. You don't have to tell me, but I want you to know that I've applied, and I know some people that know both of us, and I think you may have been approached as well. And so I don't know if you're going to apply. You don't have to tell me. And he immediately said, well, I've applied as well. And I said, well, okay, I've got a crazy idea, and if you don't like the idea, I'm going to tell you right now, I'll pull my name out because I don't want to compete for this position at all with you. And so I described, what would you think about doing this together, being co-presidents? And to Jim's credit, he immediately said, that's interesting. I like it. And So we both, I think, decided we'd go talk to our spouses, assuming that they would throw cold water on it and wake us up, and neither of them did. So we reconnected later that week, and I said, what are you thinking now? And he said, you know, I think I like it even better. But we decided to approach a couple of different individuals that knew both of us. And again, we thought, okay, this is where it ends. And in both cases, they were more enthusiastic, I think maybe than we were, about the idea, because they knew us. And I don't think they would be fans necessarily of this model every time, but knowing the two of us, I think they were. And so we went back to the search committee and said, you know what, we don't want to be considered individually, we want to be considered together. And think about that for just a minute. And we've got a few trustees around here. And think about what we did to that search committee. I mean, here are two, to begin with, non-academic, non-traditional candidates. And now we're going, okay, by the way, do a co-presidency. It's never been done in higher ed, but let's throw that in the works. And to their credit, they put us through our paces. They put together a subcommittee, put us through our paces for really about 2 months, month and a half, which was a wonderful process, made us really get more positive, I think, about the approach. And ultimately, they agreed with the approach. We went in front of a campus kind of forum, a town hall forum, and the campus community, I think, there were a number of skeptics in that crowd, and I'm not going to say we won them all over initially in that setting, but ultimately I think the campus committee or community supported it, and then the board, as you said, voted in February, and off we went. So that's a really long version of what I promised as a short story.
No, but I think it sets the stage for the things that I did want to ask about the governing model. You mentioned that there was some skepticism, and I suspect that it was skepticism not only about the co-presidency, but the fact that the two of you come from a business and nonprofit background as opposed to an academic background.
Yeah, there definitely was. I mean, it was, we probably got more support from the business community and the larger community. The faculty, there were certainly some pockets there that were not big fans of this. As Doug said, I think we made a lot of progress. In fact, probably the biggest doubter, won't name any names, has really come around and very supportive. And people wanted to see it succeed. So there's been nobody was resisting it just for the sake of resisting it. And it's worked out well. I mean, the biggest concerns we heard raised were, how do you make decisions? Where does the buck really stop?
Yeah.
And I had one of our older alums come in and say, all right, who gets the placard that says the buck stops here? We have not had a challenge with that. And I think if you think about that, think about it in your own workplace or wherever you are. If you really are aligned around the values and the mission and where you're going, it is not difficult to make decisions at this level. It's difficult. The bigger challenge, the more important one, is to push that down throughout the whole organization. You want people to be empowered to make decisions at every level of the organization. So honestly, knock on wood, we have not had a challenge there. The other thing they were worried about is bureaucracy. Does this become bureaucratic? How do you communicate? We meet every morning, and we discuss things, and I think anybody that works at the college will tell you that we haven't gotten hung up on delays in decisions. We have to move, and that's something with academia, and we've got a lot of our colleagues here. Academia probably isn't well known for being real nimble and moving quickly. You know, in the world we live in today, we have to be more nimble, and we recognize that.
I think the other part of that is, I think honestly people looked at, particularly Jim's case, low ego. I think they knew that we weren't in it as a stepping stone. We didn't have a desire to be the presidents of the College of Idaho and then move on to, you know, Yale or something else as a career move. We were at College of Idaho for one reason. We're passionate about the college. We're passionate about the educational opportunities it provides. And when they saw that, we're splitting the salary, so I think they could see that we're in it for the right reasons and not in it just to boost our ego and kind of upgrade our career opportunities.
So is there a division of labor between the two of you? I mean, are there areas that the two of you specialize in, and how does that work?
Jim does all the work, so if that's that division?
We do have a division of labor. I mean, there's a lot of overlap. Doug has enrollment and kind of the finance side. He has academic affairs. I have student affairs, marketing, fundraising, and athletics. So that's how those are divided. But there's a lot of overlap. We can't have two presidents in different places at the same time. So that allows us. Tomorrow I'll be up in Coeur d'Alene. Doug will be on campus. He will not have to pick up the phone if he has to make a decision in an area that I oversee. So it's worked out well that way.
Well, and we communicate, as Jim said, every day. So anytime he's got a meeting, he's great. He comes to me. Here's what happened in it. Here's, you know, a few things going on. Hopefully I do the same. And honestly, it's been great from that standpoint. We can get out, and I don't know that we're accomplishing twice what somebody can, but we're accomplishing more than either of us individually could.
Do you ever disagree? Are there areas where you've really had to have a tough discussion between the two?
Gotta admit, Doug was pretty bummed when I got the purple folder and he got the yellow folder. I can honestly say we've not come to a difficult decision that we... Doug's had to coach me through a couple of things. We weren't invited to the college because everything was perfect. And I think, again, our colleagues can talk. It's a challenge. It's a business. And so from a business standpoint, the business model isn't working. And so we're having to make some tough decisions. And we recently went through some reduction in workforce. That was tough. And I will say, I mean, I really appreciate it's more coaching, it's conversation, and I do think two heads are better than one. I think we come to better decisions that way. But we haven't had a tough one yet. I've had tough ones, but not any that, where we were in disagreement.
We've used the analogy a few times. It's like a marriage, and Jim and Linda have been married 45 years. Beth and I have been married 30 years, so we're not claiming we have all the secrets to a great marriage, but, I mean, it's a collaboration. And so the best part is, you know, Jim will walk in and have a wonderful idea, and we can kick it around for, you know, 30 minutes, an hour, or I'll come in with a thought, and, you know, he can send me a different direction, and we know what we're each thinking. We started out the first month or so, and both of us would use the phrase, well, I'm not sure what Jim's thinking, but here's what I would say. And pretty soon we quit saying it because I knew exactly what he's thinking. He knows exactly what I'm thinking, and we're collaborating on it. So we haven't had an issue that's been tough. We told the board going in, if we come to you to break a tie, fire us because the model's not working and we're not working. And we haven't been close. I mean, there's not anything. We flipped a coin one time, and that was because we couldn't remember. We always try to, one of the things we told everybody on campus was, just because there's two of us doesn't mean you're going to get twice the speeches. And so we couldn't remember who had spoken last in event, so we literally flipped a coin to see, and Jim got to go first, by the way.
Yeah. I won.
So, but that's the upside of having two co-presidents is that you can, you know, collaborate and discuss and kick around ideas that maybe one of you alone wouldn't have floated. Mm-hmm. So the you know, there's a positive to kind of that process. Since neither of you come from an academic background, and this is one of the audience questions, I think it's a really good one, how do you evaluate the faculty? Mm-hmm. And what is your role in evaluating the faculty?
I can start on that one. First and foremost, we have an incredible Vice President of Academic Affairs, David Douglas. So one of the first things, David came to us from Willamette about 18 months ago, and before we even started, I don't know, three or four faculty members kind of grabbed us and said, we don't care what you do other than keep David Douglas. He's amazing. And so, again, that was part of why we were comfortable coming in, was we had a great academic dean who had the trust and support of the faculty, has the chops, so to speak, in that business to have their respect. And so David is in complete control of that side of the house, and so we, you know, David's great. He keeps us informed about what's going on, but honestly, the faculty don't want us spending a lot of time evaluating them. Shocker. But when that does go on, we have a great partner in David.
Yeah. I just say the whole model is based on, and my whole career has been based on empowering those people that work with you. You have to get the right people in the right spot and let them do their job, and he does a great job there. Doesn't mean we don't have some, I'll tell you one place where, you know, I came out of, and this is a normal path, right, from swim coach to college president. Not in the plan, but I know when I was a swim coach, in fact, Andrew was my first recruiter. He's from Renaissance High School, brilliant student, academic All-American, All-American swimmer. He's a poster person for what we want at the College of Idaho. We went into his home and recruited him. Because we knew he was a good fit for us. And also because I was a swim coach. We don't do that often enough on the academic side. Why aren't we in kids' houses that are, you know, 35 ACTs and national merit finalists? We need to have the same urgency there. That's what we're, you know, at the end of the day, he's a great swimmer, All-American. He is not going to swim for his career. He's there to get an education, and swimming, we think, is a part of that. But we've got to have that same urgency around the academic side. And so there are things that we look at through a different lens that I think are helpful and are being well received by the faculty. Oh, yeah, that probably makes sense.
You touched on it a little bit, Jim, the financial challenges that you've been facing. How has your background in nonprofit world and, Doug, your background in more corporate finance, how has that informed your decisions on the financial end, on the fiduciary end?
Well, yeah, I think as anybody in higher ed would tell you, the winds are not necessarily at every college's back right now. So there's a great, there's a lot of competition for students, and those students are demanding higher and higher what we call discount rates. So all these bright students from Boise High have worked hard in their career to get to where they're at academically. And even though they may come from a family of enough means to pay for a College of Idaho education or an NNU education or a Boise State education, they want to be rewarded for that education, and they want scholarship dollars. So across the country right now, colleges are discounting their tuition roughly, or their costs, about 60%. So sticker price is X, and students are paying 40% of that. And we're a little bit better than that, but that's a model that financially makes it difficult. And so we've spent a lot of time. We went on a listening tour right out of the gate, sat down with every faculty member, every staff member. We eat lunch with students every day. We're on campus and kind of what's going right, what's not going right. So we've used all of that as background to kind of inform what we think we need to adjust from the business model standpoint. But it's not secret. It's fundraising, it's enrollment, it's keeping the students. Once they're there, you got to retain those students, and it's managing your expenses. Those are the keys. It's not rocket science, but it's hard. It's an easy model, but it's hard to get there. And then having Jim, and certainly on the fundraising side, Jim's amazing, and I'll let him speak to that.
Yeah, I wouldn't add a lot, except that my background working on a nonprofit. I think that, and there's some nonprofit leaders here, I think you learn in the nonprofit world that it's a noble enterprise. You know, I worked at the Y. Loved, wouldn't change a day of my time at the Y. And actually, it was more than four decades, 41 years I had with the Y. So just saying. But I loved it there. But you also realize you're a business. I mean, we have the same business pressures that anyone else has. And so you cannot, you know, just hope because we're doing great things somehow, from somewhere, things are going to work out. You have to work at it. And so that realization, I think the same thing happens on a college campus. People think, I hate to say it, and I don't want to say it in a negative way, but in my old world, YMCAs close every year. Colleges, especially small liberal arts colleges, close every year. So there's a sense of urgency. This is too important, and particularly in the state of Idaho. I mean, if you were in New Hampshire, you'd be raving about Dartmouth. We believe we're that Dartmouth to the state of Idaho, and we're very important here, as are all the other options we've got. We've got our friend Bert back there from CWI. We need all people on deck, but there is that, I think, a little bit elevated sense of urgency that we've got to get this right. The model, the business model, isn't working, really hasn't worked for probably almost our entirety of our history, 127 years, and we've got to get to a sustainable business model.
I think, too, Kevin, I'd add that that's where the co-presidency works in my mind. I mean, we're able to make fundraising calls at the same time we're pushing forward initiatives. And at least what I've seen in the past at, like, the College of Idaho and smaller schools is you have great ideas and you have great initiatives, but there's not enough resources to push those to the finish line. And now we've got somebody, when Jim's out of town on fundraising calls, I can keep pushing things forward that need to move on initiative fronts as well.
Let's break back down that process of recruitment and retention a little bit. And this is a chance to make kind of an individualized pitch here, because this is a really good question from one of our Boise High School students. What are some of the aspects of the College of Idaho that you're using to incentivize students to study and stay in Idaho as opposed to leaving the state?
Well, I probably should turn to three of our students here. I look back there and I see Lawrence Smizer, who just finished her degree about 10 days ago at the College of Idaho, local student. I see Gibson Berryhill over here, Timberline High School, who's in his senior year. And of course, you heard about Andrew, and so one of the things we're looking at is we like to say we're bringing the world to Idaho. And with 74 countries on our campus now, think about the opportunity. You heard about Andrew's roommate from Senegal, his lab partner from Kazakhstan. Where are you going to get that? Not only in Idaho, where are you going to get that in the United States, period? And so for a local student to have that opportunity, you know, most of our local students, and I'm a great example. I grew up in Meridian, Idaho. Never been on a plane before I went to the College of Idaho. Never been out of the country before I went to the College of Idaho. And I don't think that's terribly unusual still a year or two later now that these students are here, maybe 30 years later. But that is what we bring. So in terms of incentivizing them, it's a chance to get exposed to an international education while staying in Idaho. And as you said, Caldwell can be as far away or as close as you want it. And I'm sure Gibson and Lauren and Andrew like to go home, but I'll bet they don't mind being on campus and choosing when they do that. So in terms of just one way, I'd say that's bringing the world to Idaho.
Yeah, I would just add to that, the students that we get come from these, they're called the United World Colleges, the international students. These schools are located in 17 different places around the world, only one in the United States. They take an international baccalaureate education, and they are extraordinary students. Most of them are high-need students in terms of their financial ability to pay, but these are actually high schools. They're called United World Colleges, but they're high schools. And they come here with a skill set of communicating and different perspectives. They add so much to the classroom and the campus experience. We're also residential. You're going to live on campus for 3 years. You're going to get to know people. We have one cafeteria. I've done this several times when I've invited guests to come over, and we'd love to have you come over and meet our students. They're the best way we can sell the college. So talk to these folks before you leave. But I've had in the cafeteria, I've asked somebody, look around and see how many students are on their phones. You know, you can be at a dinner table in your own house and everybody's on their phone. And guess what? Every time I've done that, one student, one time it was two, they're actually sitting and having conversation at the table in our Simplot dining hall. That doesn't happen every place. We are a place, and we believe in this, face-to-face education. You're going to have professors. You know, you can look and great educators in here, but we have one of our alums who came to the College of Idaho. His wife went to Cal Berkeley. She said, oh, man, you look at the roster at Cal Berkeley and the professors and the Nobel laureates and all that. She said, I never met one of them. If you come to the College of Idaho, you're going to meet your professor. You're going to be in class with that professor. You're going to do research. Andrew was in a lab last summer between his freshman and sophomore year, doing graduate-level research. You're going to get those opportunities that you're probably not going to get at many places. So All we ask is come take a look. You live in Idaho, you owe it to yourself, come take a look. If it's not the right fit, that's okay. One last thing, Caldwell gets a bad rap. We're gonna quit apologizing for Caldwell. It is a great community. Guess where the crime rate is lower, Boise or Caldwell? Caldwell, to many of your surprise, probably. It is a great, safe community. Boise is an awesome, I love Boise. It's a great community, but we're gonna quit dissing Caldwell. Come over and see us, come over and see the campus. We think you'll like what you see. And if it's not the right fit, you'll find the right fit. We've got lots of them, but we're a great place.
Let's stay on the topic of recruiting because it dovetails to a question from the audience. This is something the College of Idaho has wrestled with for about 20 years, trying to get the size of the student body to a number that's sustainable. It's been an ongoing process. It's been an ongoing challenge. What are you doing differently this time, and what are you doing differently as new co-presidents?
Sure. I think a couple things. So I'd say in the past, and I'd say it hasn't been the last 20 years, it's been about 127 years we've been wrestling getting it right. But for us, we're really doing a couple of things. So one is focusing close and working out. And for a long time, I think the college, like a lot of colleges, you know, said, gee, let's go recruit really high-performing, well-to-do students in Southern California, in Northern California, in Portland, in Seattle. And we lost track of the great students that are within, you know, 30 minutes of our campus, 2 hours of our campus. And we looked at where are the students that really thrive in our world. So those students that do well in that, you know, we have a 9-to-1 student-faculty ratio. You're going to get a lot of close attention. Who does well in those environments? And it's students from Idaho. And so we're proud to have 55% of our students from the state of Idaho, and we don't want to change that. We want to get more of the bright students that need our type of education, but we're mixing that in with the international students that bring that magic, bring that collaboration. So we're focused on that, and the good thing about College of Idaho and for all of the colleges that are in the room today is the demographics in Idaho are, you know, we have one of the few places in the country where the demographics are improving. We're getting more graduates every year. Population's growing. Schools in the Northeast, in the Midwest would be thrilled to have the wins we have at our backs in terms of graduates, and we just need to get the education out. I think as an industry, liberal arts colleges have done a poor job nationwide of selling what's different about it, what's unique about a liberal arts education, why is that important? We haven't touched on that necessarily, but in this world of high tech and rapid change where jobs are, you know, jobs are coming and going and the job you have in 5 years may not exist today, boy, having that broad liberal arts education is more important than it's ever been. Being able to have the width of knowledge that I see looking around this room is even more relevant today than it was 20 years ago. So we're starting close. We want to get as many high-performing students from Idaho and mix those with our international community.
Well, let's stay there because I think it's a really important topic facing any liberal arts college in the country right now. How do you, as presidents of the liberal arts college, make that case to the public, not just to students, but to the public, in a time where so much emphasis is being paid on college as a pathway to careers, especially careers in the STEM fields? How do you make the case for liberal arts education in the STEM era?
Well, I think one of the ways we do is, you know, there is a lot of pressure, and parents sitting in the room, if you've got students that are looking at college, obviously you want them to end up with a job, right? You want them to end up going into a career. We like to talk about ending up with a calling, not just a job, but a calling, finding something that you wake up every day. And I've been blessed my entire working career to wake up going to work knowing, wow, the organization I'm working for is making a difference. Whether I did a lick of good that day was debatable, but the organization that I worked for always did, and I've continued to have that. And it doesn't have to be. I was in a nonprofit world. Now I'm in the college. It can be any place, but you've got to find something that just lights you up. And we have a great way of doing that by exposing people to a major and three minors. I look at the students that are here. I know Andrew's got two majors and three minors, and Warren, I believe, is another one who's got a couple of majors and a minor, and Gibby, and you probably do too. I know one of them. But we expose people to lots of things. You don't always know. You think you wake up, you know, you're 8 years old or in the eighth grade, you know, you want to go to medical school. Maybe. Great if you do, but sometimes that can change. And the only way you know is to be exposed to these different experiences. And even if you don't go into that as a career, to have an avocation, I see my friends Dan and Paula back there, to have an appreciation of the arts, to understand the arts, to go and know what you're seeing, what you're hearing is important too. So we just think it's more important today than it's ever been in our society. You know, you talked about a place where we, and Doug talked about headwinds, places where we don't have headwinds, and I know all our educators would agree with us on this, we don't have headwinds in the value of education in this state. Education's our ticket. It always has been, it always will be. That's what's going to make us as individuals have the opportunity to have a successful life. It's also where we better put a stake in the ground around our state. We need to be known as an education state, a place where we do get to that 60%. And we've got a responsibility for that, for promoting education on the larger scale. Bert's back there, CWI, what a tremendous addition. Do you think we maybe needed a community college? I mean, 33,000 students there. Where did they go before we created that? We have to make those investments.
So since I've done two series of stories in the past year about the 60% goal, I'd feel remiss if I didn't ask you both what your perspective is on that as, you know, presidents of a private institution. I mean, you know what the state is pushing for in terms of post-secondary completion, be it college or professional certification. What's your perspective on that 60% goal, and how do you see College of Idaho playing a role in that? Mm-hmm.
One way I'd say, I mean, it goes back to some of the words in educational vernacular, grit and growth mindset. We've got to have both. We can't give up on that. Again, I'll go to CWI. We've got to create better articulation agreements. We've got a peak curriculum that's fairly complicated. We sat down with Bert and said, we got to get to a point where if a student has gone to CWI for 2 years and they meet our credentials and our criteria in terms of their academic performance, we ought to be able to tell them they come in as a junior. They come in with 2 years worth of credits. We've got to start doing those kind of things. We also have a responsibility to send our students out into the community. And we need to send students out that reflect the demographics. We're really proud that 14% of our student body are Latino. For them to go out, especially in the community in which we live, to go out and be in the schools, to invite school students to come to our campus, expectations are important. Kevin, I know you well enough to know that's your kids are on the college path, but it's a birthright, and for most of us sitting in this room, you were born not in a bad way, but your parents just expected you're going to go to college. For too many of our students, that's not an expectation, and we need to create that mindset that's what we're doing, that's how we roll, that's how things are done here. So we all have to be on that bandwagon, and we need the support from the legislature to continue and even double down on their investment in education, even though as a private institution, we get no state support.
I think as a general rule, higher ed has done a poor job of selling why it's important, honestly. I mean, you look around and there's so many, I talk to high school students and they're wrestling with, well, look it, I can go out and get this job tomorrow and earn X. Why do I need to spend these dollars on a college degree? And we've done a poor job of selling what the advantage of a college degree is today. And you look at jobs out there and pick the number, but I think it's 2/3 of most future jobs need some type of college education. And we've done a poor job of letting everybody know, you know, your lifetime earnings, and there's all different reports, but you'll earn $1 million more. And not that dollars ought to be the decision to go to college, but that is a big difference. And then you think about the value to society of being well-educated, well-informed citizens. So I think we as higher ed need to do a better job, but we're in full support that Idaho's got to do more to go on.
For our radio audience, you're listening to a City Club of Boise forum with the co-presidents of the College of Idaho, Doug Brigham and Jim Everett. I want to go back to something you were talking about earlier, the time that you spend on campus talking to students, you know, having lunch with the students. And I suspect you hear different stories about where students are in their journey and what they need from their institutions. Probably different when you talk to maybe a first-generation student as opposed to a student whose parents went to school, or when you talk to a student from Boise as opposed to a student from Kazakhstan. But there probably are some unifying common threads that you hear that probably go to retention and success. Give us a sense of that. What are the students... When the students have the ear of one of the presidents, what do they really want to tell you?
Well, so often they talk about that mentor or mentors that they have. I have yet to come across a successful student. And I'll challenge you, ask these students that are here, ask them who their mentors are on campus. If they only have one, I'll be shocked. In most cases, they'll have multiple mentors. You're going to find that. And that's they're looking for that. They're looking for people. And these are mentors that last far beyond their time at the college. Louis Atterbury is 92, and he has lunch every 6 weeks with a guy named Mike Woodhouse, who's one of our seven Rhodes Scholars. They do that every 6 weeks since Mike has graduated. And I think Mike was in your class, Doug, which was 30 years ago. Is that what you're claiming today? Okay.
Plus or minus.
So I think we hear a lot about that. We do hear some, you know, angst about jobs and careers, but not a lot. Mental health is an issue on campuses, on every campus. One of the things that I love at the College of Idaho is we know these students. If Andrew walks in and I know his demeanor, and he walks in and he doesn't look the same, we're going to have a conversation about that. Is something wrong today, Andrew? And we're going to find the kind of help that they need. So that comes up from time to time.
I just add, there's a lot of rhetoric that you can hear and read about the state of high school students and young people in general, and boy, the world's in a rough place because these guys are going to be taken over before long. And I know, I don't need to ask Jim what he feels about this because I know it, and it's the same for me. We are in good hands. I mean, these students are so articulate. They are so much more mature than I was at that age. Bar's not high, by the way. But they are passionate, they're articulate, and they want knowledge. These folks, they want to be challenged. They don't want an easy path. They don't want to know what's the easy class and we'll go find that. They want to learn. They have a passion for that. They want to go on and do great things. They're very socially conscious. They're worried about the rhetoric that's in the country right now. I mean, but all in a good way. I mean, so I would love, Jim and I both, boy, I tell you, if you get an opportunity, come over, sit down with students, you're going to leave feeling better about where this world is. I guarantee it, and I'm sure any of the other educators in this room would say the same thing. We're in good shape. This is a bright group, and they're going to do great things, and that's the fun for us.
Well, it really ties into a question that I got from the audience. I mean, some people in the audience are hoping that this next generation of students will make a difference on a lot of these issues, whether it's inclusion or civility, as you were talking about, and respect, or you know, thinking meaningfully about some of the big problems that we're facing as a country and as a world. From what you're seeing from these students, they're not just able to take on that challenge down the road; they're eager for it.
Oh, they embrace it. Their commitment to social justice and a civil conversation is inspiring. So there's not a day that goes by. If I'm having a bad day, I go to the cafeteria. And I've called some people. I've called, I won't name names, but some grumpy older folks in this community. I had one guy having a really bad day. I said, why don't you come over to the campus tomorrow? And he did. And within 15 seconds, his attitude had changed drastically. You see things like we have the last student to arrive on campus for us this year was a young man named Hashim. He's from Syria, and you might imagine why he was late getting there, getting his visa all cleared up. Got here 2 weeks after school had started, so he came in late. He's in his first year seminar, and one of our students, and some of you may know her, Bella Martin from Boise High School, She graduated 2 years ago and then did a Rotary exchange. She saw him in the cafeteria that night, and she ran over to him and said, come sit with us. And then she gave him her textbooks and said, you probably haven't had time to buy a textbook. Here's my textbooks. We have a study group that meets on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Why don't you come join us so we can get caught up? That's the kind of stuff we see every day, the kindness and the compassion of these students. We have a theme at the college about making the circle bigger. How do we make the circle bigger? And we didn't create that. That's what we see. The values that we have at the college existed. We're just trying to call them out. And that's one of them, is valuing face-to-face, valuing making our own circle bigger and including more people, and making our circle of curiosity bigger, meeting people that are different, that have different perspectives, and to see these students that can have drastically different ideas and opinions and perspectives, but say, wow, that's cool. I appreciate that perspective. We see it all the time. And it's you know, we literally can sit at a table with somebody from Syria, Germany, Norway, and Kazakhstan, and how does it get any better than that in the world that we live in?
It's such a big part of the academic experience, but it's also a challenge to assimilate students from around the world on a campus. How do you go about that process, and is it easier in a small school? Is it easier in a smaller community like Caldwell?
Well, it's definitely critical that you do it, and you do it right. We've got a great team, first and foremost. So our VP for admissions, a guy named Brian Bava, came to us. He's a graduate of one of these United World Colleges that Jim mentioned earlier, so he understands the environment that these students are coming in. We've got a team of a couple of other folks that do that, and the neat thing for us is we're at a level now where it's not a fun little sideshow. It's not, oh, there's our five international students. Go say hi to them if you get a chance. This is a vibrant part of our community, and just honestly, they do more to assimilate us than we do them. And a great example, we have a freshman, Omotayo. He's from Nigeria. So freshman orientation weekend, we take everybody up to McCall, Camp Ida Haven. And the first thing they do, they take all their stuff off the bus, go dump it in the bunkhouses, go back into the amphitheater. So we have 300 freshmen crammed into this amphitheater. First thing on the docket is Jim and Doug. So you might question our order of priorities that they hear us first, but yeah. Somebody made that
decision.
Gets
better from there.
Yeah, so anyway, they're going to come listen to Jim and Doug. We're walking up to the amphitheater, and we hear all this clapping and all this applause and laughter, and I'm looking at Jim, and he's looking at me, and I go, I thought we were first on the agenda. And we go up there, and Omotayo is on stage. We have never met Omo before. Omo has never met any of these 300 students. He's a freshman from Nigeria. He looks over, comes running over off stage, and he said, oh, President Brigham, President Everett, do you mind if I introduce you? Yeah. What are you going to say? He's on stage. Sure, Omo, go ahead. But that's the kind of students we have. I mean, these guys, they're not waiting for us to assimilate. They're ready. I mean, and whether they're from Filer or they're from Nigeria, it doesn't matter. They're ready to assimilate. They're ahead of us on these things. So it's exciting to see.
Kevin, I just add, so we're part of this network. These students from the United World Colleges have about 100 schools they can decide to go to in the United States. They get a scholarship from a guy named Shelby Davis. He writes a scholarship check. It's about $50 million that he did last year in scholarshiping for these students. So they can pick any place they want. We had the second highest number of students of any school in the United States last year, second only to University of Oklahoma. They are kind of a sideshow at University of Oklahoma. They had 56, we have 55. That makes a much bigger impact on our campus. And they're spreading the word. Come to the College of Idaho. It's welcoming. You're a part of a larger group. So we think we're in a very good place and a unique place with this partnership with the UWCs.
You talked about what you're doing and what a lot of liberal arts colleges are doing in terms of trying to reduce the sticker price and make it more affordable. But debt is such a reality for so many students. What can you do as a college to limit or mitigate the impact of debt and, you know, the lasting impact it has on your graduates as they go forward in life?
that's not an easy one. First and foremost, a couple of things. A, we've got to control the cost side of the higher education. And higher education, I think in general, tuition's gone up about 3 percentage points across the country faster than inflation. So that's a model that doesn't work in the long run. It's unfair to our students. So we've got to do something to control the cost side of the equation and bring tuition in line. I think the second part is, we've got to figure out opportunities to align our students with jobs and things like that. So our students are coming to us looking for, they want to attend, they want to get through, and if we can do a better job of finding ways that they can help pay for the cost as they go. The third is, and we're working hard on this every day, is what can we do from a scholarshiping standpoint? There are so many generous people in not only this community, but in foundations that want to help students of higher need. And matching those students up with more opportunities so that they can afford, whether it's at College of Idaho or it's at NNU or any school, that's an important part. And we're just scratching the surface, I think, on what we can do there. But we've got to do our part and make it more affordable as a starting point.
Just a couple of things I'd add. Dual credit is a good phenomenon. Students are coming in. Lauren's graduating in December. That she didn't go a full 4 years at the College of Idaho. That's going to be more the norm. 4 years is the norm at the College of Idaho instead of a 5, 6, 7, 8 year. Some of you may have students on the 8 or 9 year plan. We like the 4 year plan, and you probably do too. So I think that's important. We're tightening the relationship with CWI. 33,000 students, we only got 3 last year. And part of that's because we haven't recruited enough there. They have over 1,000 Phi Theta Kappa, the equivalent of Phi Beta Kappa students. So they've got some great students who choose to go to CWI first, partly, for some of them because it's more affordable. We'll be recruiting more from there. So we've got to be open to more things than we have in the past.
Another audience question has to do with freedom of speech on campus. It's been a large issue on a lot of campuses. What's your approach been at College of Idaho?
Well, I think by definition, we're big proponents of freedom of speech. I think it's been very disappointing to me to see what has happened a number of times across campuses that, in my mind, have tamped down freedom of speech opportunities. For us, and I'll use an example, we had Dr. Jasper Lacalzi had not a debate with the two gubernatorial candidates here in the fall on our campus. He had a conversation with the candidates, and that is what we're about on the College of Idaho campus. We're not about there has to be a right and there has to be a wrong. We want to hear all sides of the issue, and we really work hard with our students you have to be able to critically think, and part of critically thinking is being able to hear and understand opposing views to what you may think. And so, I would shudder to think we might have somebody who's shouted down or not invited or disinvited, so to speak, from the college just because their views differ what maybe some of our students or a lot of our students even think. We think it's highly critical that in a campus like ours that you promote that kind of interaction, and that's where we're going to get better. You got to be able to critically think and, hold somebody's feet to the fire if you think they're wrong or question them, and you may change your opinion, but that kind of debate and dialogue is huge for us.
But at the same time, as you're trying to recruit a more diverse and really an international student body, any form of campus speech at some level is going to be controversial with some of your students. That makes it tougher, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'll use, we were just down at one of the United World Colleges. It's in New Mexico. It's the only one in the United States. They have what's called the Bartos Institute. And the Bartos Institute is promoting civil dialogue. And we're bringing a dozen of their students in June, this coming June, to our campus. They'll be working with our students, hopefully some high school students in the area, leadership as well. And it's all around how can you have those kind of dialogue and that kind of discussion with students. You look at our students, and all three of them here have been involved in a lot of different things, student government, things like that. And they learn. They learn how to have different opinions. And how do you have that? I mean, you have all these amazing students from all around the world, all around Idaho, who see things so terribly different. But they have the ability to think, and they have the ability to question. And, yeah, sometimes it's not going to be lined up perfectly with your values, but they understand how to have that conversation, frankly, better than I do, and a lot of us do. It's inspiring to see.
And the alternative is to throw our arms up and be satisfied with what's going on. We can't be. I mean, the lines get being pushed back further and further, and we just can't do it. It's fine. You know, it's great to disagree, but we can do it in a way that's civil. You just flat out can.
So we started by talking about the governance, and I wanted to wrap up with a question about the governance that came from the audience. How does this play out down the road? Mm-hmm. I mean, do you do a joint retirement? Does Ren stay and then goes to like a reality TV show here? I mean,
who's voted off the island?
Yeah, that's a great. Maybe I'll start with it. I mean, I'm the older guy. I mean, Doug, working with Doug is just an absolute joy. He's the guy that, you know, I'm not embarrassed to say I'm 66. I retired, knew I wasn't going to stay retired, didn't know what I was going to do. The swim coaching gig was great. I loved it. I miss it terribly, being on that deck and having 36 kids that become part of your family. But this, you know, spoke to me. It's a calling that spoke to me. I'm just by my age, I'm unlikely to be around as long as Doug is. Doug gave up lots of options. Any of you that know Doug, he could have gone and worked any place in this community. He could have made a lot of money. Chose not to do that because he wants to be at the college. Whether it plays out that I retire and Doug stays on, I retire and Doug becomes a co-president. We're in it to get someplace. I'm not retiring tomorrow unless they ask me to. We got a couple board members here, and I hope that doesn't happen. I hope I get to go out on my own terms. But you have to be there long enough to get something done, too. With no disrespect to anybody else, you look at Bob Custer. Bob was here for a long time. Bob was here for 17 years, I believe. He got a lot done. He didn't get it done in his first couple years. There is relationships are what matter, and fortunately, we've got relationship in this community, and we want to, you know, we want to maintain those relationships. And so I don't know how it'll play out, but we haven't talked much about it yet. We're 8 months in. I hope we're not talking about retirement yet. But I see lots of different scenarios. We're not married. The college isn't married to the co-presidency model. We wouldn't recommend it to everybody. It works. We're in a great scenario right now for it to work at the college. Whether that's, you know, they decide to continue with that or not, that'll be up to the board. But I'm likely to go before Doug does, and that's good news for the college.
I'll just add in, and I said this at our inauguration, I feel like I won the lottery. I mean, to get to work with Jim Everett, and I know a whole lot more people in this room know Jim than they know me. And if you ever want to get nothing done in a day, go to a coffee shop for a meeting with Jim. It is nonstop. Hey, Jim! And you get zero done. I realized that after about the third session that don't go to coffee shops. Go somewhere where you won't get interrupted because everybody knows him. In terms of your question, I don't know how it plays out, but I tell you, there's nothing more fun than getting up and getting to work with him, getting to share ideas with him, seeing his passion, seeing him around students, and then going to work with our students and our faculty and our staff. It's an exciting time, and it's an exciting time to be in higher education. There's a lot of challenges, but a lot of opportunities. And it's never been more important than it is today. We need to have more students going on. We need to have students getting college education. And we're lucky to get to do it together. And I hope it plays out for a long time.
Well, I want to thank all of you for being here this afternoon and for your questions. I want to thank our radio audience on Boise State Public Radio for tuning in. And I want to thank both of you, Doug Brigham, Jim Everett, for taking the time to talk about your job, your shared job, and your shared vision for the College of Idaho. Thank you.
Thank you, Governor.
You have been listening to the City Club of Boise, a public forum discussing important issues of the day in a nonpartisan, civil manner. The next City Club event is an evening conversation to be held at the Black History Museum in Boise on Wednesday, the 23rd of January, 2019, that will focus on taxes, education, and the economy. Find more on that event and other forums at cityclubofboise.org. Connect on Facebook and Twitter by searching for City Club of Boise.